All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are discussing the potential keys to victory and my expectations for the Falcons entering this week three game between them and the New York Giants, as well as talking about the future of Matt Ryan and diving into one possible scenario where this year and or next year might be his last in Atlanta.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, putting up content at the Falcoholic, the SB Nation website for the Atlanta Falcons, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the one practice squad addition made by the Falcons. We'll be talking about sort of some of the keys to victory and really focusing on my expectations for what we might see in this week three game between the Falcons and Giants. We'll get into the conversation about sort of why I've been more critical and less patient with this team through 2 weeks this season, and that will sort of lead us into a conversation about Matt Ryan's future and whether or not the Falcons will essentially draft his replacement next year with the idea of trading him next year or the year after. And so we'll get into all of that, some of these things that I've been mulling over in my brain these last few days and or weeks. But on the note of Matt Ryan's future and whether or not the Falcons will be drafting his potential replacement at the top of the draft, you know, the perfect place to get some insight into that is the Locked On NFL Draft podcast, which is back with new hosts in Eric Crocker and Ryan Tracy, giving you both player scouting and analytics when it comes to this college football season, as well as the upcoming NFL draft. And of course, you can follow the Locked On NFL Draft podcast on YouTube, on Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts. So let's talk about the one roster move that the Falcons did wind up making on Thursday, signing defensive tackle Anthony Rush to their practice squad. He is replacing running back Caleb Huntley, who is now on the practice squad injured list, which is basically the injured reserve for practice squad players. So apparently Huntley got injured at some point this week in practice and, you know, may potentially be out for the season. So we'll see if we ever get an update on his status moving forward, but knowing Arthur Smith, we will not. But on to Rush, he was just recently released by the Tennessee Titans, and, you know, seeing him be picked up, and I was like, wait, wasn't he a guy that made a bunch of plays in that first preseason game and was a big part of why the Falcons offensive line struggled in that game? And, you know, I can't recall specific plays, but judging off of his production and his Pro Football Focus grade from that first preseason game, it was like, yeah, I think you are remembering him. And what Rush is, you know, he's kind of a journeyman guy, but he's still young, 25 years old, went to UAB a couple of years ago, came into the league as an undrafted free agent, kind of bounced around the league. He's an ex-Raider. The Falcons seemingly have an affinity for some of these guys that have been with the Raiders the last couple of summers, most recently with the Titans this summer. His most extensive playing experience came in 2019 with the Eagles. He's another wide body similar to what the Falcons signed with Mike Pinnell to their practice squad last week. You know, Rush is listed around 350, 360 pounds. So he's definitely a guy that's going to be beefing up the Falcons' interior line along with Pinnell. And we'll sort of see if the Falcons wind up elevating either him or Pinnell later this season to their roster to help improve that run defense. But speaking of the run defense and potentially how it may impact this week three game, and we'll see how important it is to the team's success or whatever the case may be. You know, this week's game is going to be an important one for the Falcons, as is every week in the NFL. But, you know, this is a week where a lot of people like myself, you know, sort of expect this team to potentially get things back on track and show that they are legitimately a good team in the first 2 weeks of the season, or more an outlier, more fluky in the case of the Falcons' struggles in those games. And this is a week where they can get things back on track. But this Falcons and Giants teams are fairly evenly matched, evidenced by the fact that the Giants are favored by just 3 points. And we know that Las Vegas gives home teams 3 points in their point spreads. And that's basically telling us if this game was being played in Iowa, you know, they would be expecting a tie. And obviously that's not necessarily a scientific or accurate way of judging teams, but it's certainly informative nonetheless. And, you know, I'm hopeful, but not necessarily optimistic about the Falcons' chances in this game and the Falcons looking like the team that I want them to be. You know, we certainly could be in a reality where the Falcons play up to that potential. They're able to run the ball effectively. They're able to generate explosive plays off the play action. We look at the Giants' run defensive metrics, whether you're looking at things like DVOA or adjusted line yards or their short yardage success, you know, and directionally, they are dead last in the NFL in adjusted line yards, according to Football Outsiders, when teams run to the left end, to the left side outside. So if we run behind Jake Matthews, presumably we'll have some success. And that sort of corroborates what Patricia Traina on Locked Up Giants said on yesterday's crossover, where teams have had success running outside against this Giants team. The Giants have given up 4 touchdowns this year off of play action, the most through the first 2 games, based off of Pro Football Focus data. And, you know, the last 2 weeks with Teddy Bridgewater and Taylor Heinicke, both earning 80-plus passing grades on their play-action passes against this Giants defense. So this is an opportunity, as I said, for the Falcons to do the thing that they want to do, which is run the ball, use the play-action to generate a dynamic offense. And while I'm concerned about the potential matchup between Leonard Williams and Jalen Mayfield, you know, that's the strength of the Giants defensive line going up against the biggest weakness of the Falcons offensive line. The rest of the Giants pass rush isn't great. You know, it's bottom of the league overall as a unit in most metrics. So if the Falcons can keep Williams at bay, keep him from taking over this game, Ryan should have plenty of time to throw, which should allow this offense to potentially blossom. And one of the ways that the Falcons could do that is rolling the pocket away, more rollouts, that sort of thing, to sort of put less pressure on that left side of the offensive line to have to hold up in pass protection and running more to the outside as well, rather than trying to run it up the gut. So this game potentially sets up for the Falcons to play their best offensive football to date, and potentially one of the better matchups for this team moving forward. You know, basically this game, along with arguably the Detroit game, the Jacksonville game, and arguably the Jets game, at least based off of these early season results, you know, the Giants represent one of the softer defenses that they're going to face all year long, again, based off of the first 2 games of the season. So if this offense is going to take flight, this Falcons offense is going to take flight, it's kind of now or never. And while I am optimistic while I'm hopeful and certainly see the path for this offense moving forward on Sunday to have their sort of breakout game and certainly quiet some of the skeptical people like myself, you know, I'm always I believe it when I see it type of person. And I could certainly see a path where this game winds up being like a 34-23 win for the Falcons. But more than likely, I think this game is going to come down to, you know, the final possession and not be sort of this high scoring game. And you're going to more likely get like a 24-23 win for the Falcons. That's what I'm hoping to see. You know, this game for both teams really represents a get right game, because many of the same issues that we talk about that favor the Falcons offense going against this Giants defense also favor the Giants offense going against this Falcons defense. You know, that Giants offense is a team that's struggling to run the ball, that doesn't have a great offensive line, but they're facing a Falcons defense that isn't good against the run and struggles to generate pressure. And unlike the Giants secondary, the Falcons secondary is down their best player in AJ Terrell this week. So that's partially fueling my skepticism over the potential outcome, you know, this weekend. The other factor is that the Giants over their first 8 quarters playing have been much more competitive than the Falcons have. The Falcons are at the bottom of the league in terms of snaps that they've had in which they've had a lead or tied the game, and they've only played 15 snaps so far this year in those circumstances. The Giants have had 67 such snaps, which isn't significantly more, but it's good enough to be 22nd in the league. And so we can certainly talk about the differing caliber of opponents that each team has faced that has led to such a stat, but the point means that it seems to be, at least based off of the first 2 games, a bigger leap of faith based off of their limited body of work, that the Falcons going on the road are going to have their get right game versus the Giants playing at home. So while I'm still predicting a Falcons win, to me, this game is much more of a toss up based off of what I have seen so far this season. And so, you know, that conflicts with a lot of people that are confident, optimistic, hopeful, whatever you want to say, that, you know, over these next 3 to 5 games, that the Falcons are definitely going to get their season back on track. And as I said, I'll believe it when I see it. But it, to me, it really starts on Sunday. And this is as good an opportunity as any that they're going to get moving forward. But on that note of my skepticism, my impatience when it comes to this team getting their season back on track, I do want to talk about why it has been so difficult for me to have the same level or a comparable level of patience with this new Falcons regime as you've seen from other folks within the fan base. And of course, it does stem from some of the decisions that the team made this offseason, essentially when they zigged when I expected or wanted them, better put, to zag. And we'll get into that coming up on today's Locked On Falcons podcast. But you know, what you guys should get into is the college football side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to your favorite college team or conference, including for you SEC fans, Locked On SEC, or you UGA fans, Locked On Bulldogs. Find them on YouTube, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts. So while we saw the Falcons offensive line get pushed around these first 2 weeks, you know, I think they could use a little bit more protein, and Built Bar can provide it, and they don't have to sacrifice on flavor. Built Bars, of course, are the best tasting protein bar on the market. They come in several delicious flavors like coconut almond, mint brownie, cookies and cream, peanut butter brownie, as well as limited time flavors like the cookie dough chunk. If you're like me, you love cookie dough and the ice cream, or just in its raw form, you know, Built Bars cookie dough chunk flavor will satisfy that craving, and you don't have to feel guilty about it, because Built Bars can taste just like a candy bar. They contain 100% real chocolate, and you get none of the guilt because Built Bars are healthy too. They're low in sugar and calories, high in protein and fiber. Go order yourself some today, or help the guys out in Flowery Branch by shipping them some by heading over to the website today at built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. So when we talk about the reasonings behind why I'm impatient or more critical of this team through 2 weeks, you know, it stems from what we often see when it comes to fan discussion and fan discourse, which, of course, I and many of you are involved in every day, whether that's on Twitter or, you know, just talking the ear off of your loved one so you can complain about the Falcons for, you know, 15 minutes every day or whatever the case may be. And, you know, typically you have these sort of dichotomies of you have the optimistic fan versus the pessimistic fan. You know where I fit into that. You have the Matt Ryan hater versus the Matt Ryan lover, or whatever you want to call it. And that specific battle has been raging for basically a decade or more, and it's only louder now. Fewer questions would be raised. Certainly not from people like myself, because I always have questions, but no one questions you. No one criticizes you when you win. And now it seems like the internal strife surrounding this team among us fans seems to be centered around, are you patient or impatient when it comes to this new Arthur Smith-led regime, and whether you're overreacting to the early season struggles, as some people would call it, or being openly critical, I think is a more accurate way, or at least I would phrase it, of some of their early season struggles. Or I guess the opposite, being more laid back and being like, it's fine and give it time and all these various things. And again, how you label those camps is really not the point, but certainly I would fit into the former, being more critical to date of this new regime. And I've noticed a tendency of a lot of people that also seem to be critical. There tends to be a little bit more overlap. There tends to be a little bit bigger of that Venn diagram, that the people that seem to be more critical also were at some point in the camp of the Falcons should have drafted a quarterback this past offseason. And I don't think that's probably a coincidence. And I can't necessarily speak for everyone, but just giving my perspective on this particular issue. But I do think it boils down to questioning that decision. And you can essentially view it as the team would have to justify that decision to draft a quarterback or not to draft a quarterback if they were winning games. And this is a lesson I've learned many, many years ago, back in the days when I was questioning the moves of previous regimes under Thomas Dimitroff and Mike Smith and Dan Quinn, and where I thought they should have done X decision and they wound up doing Y decision. And of course, the success that we saw under Mike Smith in those first 5 years and Dan Quinn over those first few years wound up, in my eyes, justifying their decision to go with Y over X. Right. And then the lesson I learned was that, you know, it's not as sort of black and white as people make it out to be, where it's like, you know, one decision is right, one decision is wrong. It's really more a right versus left. It's more a preference where, you know, your one decision is vanilla, one decision is chocolate, one decision is blondes, one decision is brunettes. And I've learned over the years to try to do a better job giving the team the benefit of the doubt and understanding that there are, you know, different ways to skin a cat, as they say. And I think there tends to be a tendency among fans that to believe that one path is the right path and the other path, any path that veers from that, is the wrong path. And that tends to be misleading. But now we're in a situation, at least so far, that the decisions that the Falcons made, why decisions, so to speak, this offseason, haven't really been justified because the team is not getting nearly the positive results on the field that we would want to see them have. And the big one that keeps coming up in this discussion is the decision to pass on a quarterback, i.e. Justin Fields, at that 4 overall spot in this past year's draft in order to take Kyle Pitts. And you already have national NFL writers comparing it to the Giants passing on the quarterback in that 2018 draft so that they could take Saquon Barkley and having to settle for Daniel Jones, air quotes, settle for Daniel Jones the following year. We still don't know quite where Daniel Jones is right now, but when you compare him to some of the other alternative options that they could have had in that 2018 draft, particularly Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson with that number 2 overall selection, you certainly, I think it's fair to question that. And certainly that conversation has yet to go away and only will start to go away when Daniel Jones starts winning games. And there's a similar dynamic here in Atlanta. And so when I look back at this past offseason and look at several what we'll call pivot points this offseason where the team, where I wanted the team to do X and they wound up doing Y, you know, those pivot points to me are sort of free agency, where I wanted them to be a lot more aggressive, filling some of the various needs that they had along the offensive line and on the pass rush and secondary and whatnot near the top of my wish list in free agency. And the Falcons chose not to do that. The second pivot point being the draft, wanting them to take the quarterback at the top of the draft, but they chose not in taking Pitts. 3, me wanting them to keep Julio Jones on the team, but they chose not to do that by trading him. And of course, this preseason, wanting them to play their starters and them choosing not to do that. Now, you can certainly say of those 4 pivot points, some of those decisions were kind of already made for them. The best examples of that being free agency, given their cap limitations, trading Julio Jones because we now know that he wanted out, and trading him was a question of when, not necessarily if they would do that. And I think that's all fair. And although, once again, you know, not to rehash all these topics, but one does wonder if you knew that you were going to wind up trading Julio at some point this offseason, would that retroactively change your decision or essentially make you figure that you're in for a long-term rebuild and thus retroactively change your decisions when it came to free agency and the draft, and specifically where that applies to the draft, where you might have approached that with more of a long-term rebuild and thus been more likely to go after the quarterback with that situation. But, you know, what this really is, you know, me thinking that they should have chosen X and they wind up choosing Y, and I try my best to maintain and or maximize the objectivity that I show on this podcast and elsewhere. But obviously, you know, I'm a human being too. I'm flawed just like the rest of you, or maybe in my eyes, less flawed than the rest of you. But I certainly have my biases, and it's hard to maintain that objectivity. And that bias rears its ugly head when I see this team struggling out of the gates, unlike past regimes, you know, and it makes me a little bit quicker to criticize and question some of the decisions that they made. You know, I've already been skeptical from the jump, and it's not going to, you know, the 0-2 start and the way that it's happened is not going to make me less skeptical on some of these things. And, you know, that differs for other people that were much more praising of Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith and Dean Pease throughout the spring and summer, and much more willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, where I am not in that boat. And, you know, those people, it's easier for them to be a little bit more patient when it basically boils down to them waiting for the seeds to bear fruit, so to speak. So, you know, being aware of those two issues, it's been difficult for me to try to strike this balance between understanding that patience could lead to payoff, but given that sort of initial skepticism, the hurdle that presents, and given the past instances where previous coaches and general managers would be able to silence whatever skepticism that I had. And it's not like I wasn't skeptical of Mike Smith and Dan Quinn when they came into it, but that skepticism was quickly silenced given the relative success that those teams had right away. And when you're in a situation where the Falcons are off to arguably one of the worst starts that they've had in quite some time, given the severity of their week one loss and sort of the historicity of that going back 30 plus years. The fact that their offense is bottom ranked for seemingly the first time ever, looking at various advanced metrics, and their defense, I think the stat is that they've given up more points in the first two weeks combined than they ever have. And so I see these as red flags. And when I've been seeing red flags all along, it's very easy for someone like me to overreact, as maybe others might put it. But if you're on the opposite side of that and you haven't seen these issues as red flags all along, including those aforementioned pivot points, you see it as sort of all part of the plan. And you're just like, oh, just relax. And you can feel a lot more confident. You can feel a lot more optimistic that it's all still going to work out in the end. And that's a bit of the internal struggle that I can certainly admit that I'm dealing with right now. And it could wind up working out in the end. But, you know, that's sort of how I sort of think about it on a daily basis. So it gets back to the issue of whether this is part of the plan, a topic of discussion that has been brought up frequently on this podcast several times over the last 6 months. And, you know, I've opined that I'm not sure if it's part of the plan. I'm not sure if this team is just essentially making it up as they go. But one of the things that I've been thinking about, particularly over the last couple of weeks, is sort of what is their plan, particularly when it comes to the quarterback situation. And the broad strokes of that is knowing that the team was going to deal Julio Jones the minute they came into the building, and also knowing that Matt Ryan probably wasn't long for Atlanta, they had to sort of position themselves where they could get rid of both guys without crippling themselves financially. And it seemed like the best path that they came to, if this is the plan, was trading Julio this past summer and then probably trading Matt Ryan as early as 2023, so after next season. And doing that would probably require them to do the thing in the 2022 draft that a lot of people like myself thought that they should do in the 2021 draft by using that high pick on their quarterback of the future. And we'll get into why I think exactly, or why I think this is the potential likeliest outcome as we continue further on today's Locked On Falcons episode, and we'll break that down further. So before we get there, you know that football is back and you guys can make the most of it with a better way to create your custom pool at runyourpool.com, the premier sports pool hosting service. It's easy to run your football pool with friends, family, office mates, or podcast listeners. Locked On Falcons has a straight pick-up and pool this year, and you can join for free by clicking the link in the pinned tweet at the top of the Locked On Falcons Twitter page. Run Your Pool offers dozens of formats, including Survivor, Pick'em, Confidence Pools, and more. NFL, college football, 1 week, full season, playoff, or Super Bowl games are available. Run Your Pool has it all and gives you all the options and settings to make it your own. In the Locked On Falcons Pick'em, we have Best Bet. So if you're really confident that the Cardinals are going to beat the Jaguars in week three, you'll get more points by picking that game. Check them out today and get $10 off at runyourpool.com/lockedon, or use the promo code LOCKEDON at checkout. Anywhere, everywhere in the world, Run Your Pool helps friends and colleagues compete. Start competing today at runyourpool.com/lockedon and have your pool up and running in minutes. runyourpool.com/lockedon. So BetOnline is back and is better than ever, and all eyes are now on the gridiron as teams are back on the field to start another season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all the pro and college football action this season. With a new updated website and interface and even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline.ag continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head over to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today with the promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus. The Giants are still favored by 3 points this weekend, but you can have a lot of fun with an NFC South Moneyline Parlay, meaning if I were to put $20 down on all four NFC South teams to win their game straight up this weekend, Carolina over Houston, New Orleans over New England, Atlanta over the Giants, and Tampa Bay over the Rams, I could win over $200 if all of those bets hit. And I will not confirm or deny that I made this bet, because that would require me to admit that I betted against my beloved LA Rams. But however you want to play, BetOnline is the fastest and easy way to bet on all your favorite sports, from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait and take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So when we're talking about the future of Matt Ryan, we had Jeff Schultz on the podcast, Jeff Schultz of The Athletic, a couple of weeks ago, basically openly speculating about whether this is potentially Matt Ryan's last year in Atlanta. And it prompted me to give the subject a lot more thought. And certainly the team losing hasn't helped matters, because normally I would just be distracted by talking about the games and like, we'll worry about, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But now it seems like that bridge is coming up the more and more the Falcons lose. And I don't want to necessarily put words into Jeff's mouth, but basically the broad strokes of what he was talking about was, you know, the fact that Matt Ryan has nearly a $49 million cap hit in 2022. And that's simply untenable. And given cap projections being around $208 million, you know, at that current number, Matt Ryan's going to count about 23% of the Falcons salary cap is going to be devoted to him. And I've discussed in the past where you've rarely seen a successful team having a quarterback count more than like 13 or so percent of their respective cap in a given year, looking at teams that make it to the conference championship level or more. And that's not to suggest, as some people may interpret that, as to say that Matt Ryan's contract is preventing the Falcons from being a successful team. His cap hit over the last 3 years has been much more in the range of 8 to 10% of the Falcons salary cap. So certainly within the range of being a successful team. But, you know, on that subject, you know, the more you pay your quarterback, the less money you have elsewhere to go. And what it does is it shrinks your margin for error. You have to draft better. You have to spend more, you know, have to spend money better in free agency. And we know that the Falcons have not necessarily delivered on that aspect of that conversation. And it's very similar to the Julio Jones trade, right? One of the things I've said in the past is that, you know, trading all those picks for Julio Jones didn't break the Falcons, but it put more pressure on them for the picks that they kept to hit on those picks. And so we know that they did not do that with selections like Akeem Dent, Peter Kahns, and Lamar Holmes. And, you know, the Falcons, had they traded up for Julio Jones and then wound up drafting KJ Wright, Kelechi Osemele, and Ben Jones with those premium picks, we would be having a different conversation. And the same thing applies with Matt Ryan and paying him. You know, Matt Ryan's contract didn't mean that the Falcons had to pay guys like Brandon Fusco, James Carpenter, Jamon Brown, Vic Beasley, etc., and drafted whoever you guys consider to be these busts or bad draft picks over the last 3 or 4 years. So getting back to the subject at hand in terms of what is the quote unquote plan, you know, I've said all along that the Falcons are going to have to start making big decisions next offseason. And one of the biggest ones is going to be how they deal with Matt Ryan and his contract. And so how do the Falcons address that? They have three opportunities, right? They can either extend Matt Ryan, they could trade Matt Ryan, or they can restructure Matt Ryan. Talking about the extension, meaning that, you know, they wind up giving him a longer long-term deal or some variation of a long-term deal, adding a couple of years to his contract, and that potentially would lower his cap hit and presumably lock him into playing for the Falcons for another 2 or 3 years financially. And that to me seems very unlikely, certainly at this point, given some of the struggles. To me, the most likely outcome where that would have been a realistic possibility is if the Falcons were good, right? And that they were a playoff team this year. And given that, while that's not completely out of the realm of possibility at this point in the season with 15 games left to be played, but seems unlikely unless the Falcons are basically night and day better for the next 15 weeks than they have currently been so far this season. Talking about trade, and this is something that Jeff Schultz specifically discussed several times on the podcast over the last several months, you know, and basically citing that the Falcons could wind up trading Matt Ryan as a post June 1 trade next offseason, similar to what they did with Julio. And that would potentially save them money, because if the Falcons traded Matt Ryan prior to June 1st of 2022, they would have to carry nearly $41 million in dead money cap hit. If they waited until after June 1st, so if they traded him on June 2nd of next year, they would only have to carry about $25 million in dead money. But the problem with trading Matt Ryan next June is that I think the trade market is very likely to be dead, similar and even more so than what we saw with Julio Jones. You know, what team is going to wait until June 2nd to take on Matt Ryan's contract to be their presumptive starting quarterback, resulting in him basically missing the first 2 months, a very important period of time for the offseason, particularly for a new quarterback to come into the building? While it's not impossible for a team to wind up making that trade, it to me requires such unique circumstances that doesn't make that particularly realistic option. You know, I don't think trading Matt Ryan before June 1st is impossible, but it's unlikely because you got to remember that the Falcons are already going to be carrying over $15 million in dead money from the Julio Jones trade next year. So you're looking at, if you were to trade Matt Ryan, you know, in addition to already that dead money from Julio Jones, carrying $56 million in dead money from those two moves alone, which is going to be about 27% of the projected salary cap. And that doesn't include players like Dante Fowler and Tyler Davidson, who seem to be likely cap cuts, the possibility of trading Deion Jones and taking on that dead money next spring as well. You're talking about dead money that could be in the $75 million range, which is, you know, 35% of your salary cap going to players that are not contributing to your football team on the field. And when we talk about a sort of complete teardown or a scorched earth mentality when it comes to rebuilding this team, that's what it looks like. Now, I think that does become much more of a tenable possibility should this year's team finish with only like two or three wins. And then you're basically saying, look, what's the difference between taking the scorched earth, if, you know, in a complete teardown, because it, you know, trying to fix it, you're trying to figure it out without doing that only resulted in two or three wins. But again, I don't see that happening right now, but again, you never know how the rest of the season plays out. And so obviously there are unknown variables at this point in time as we continue this conversation. So to me, when I look at the most likely outcome, given, you know, the possibility that I don't think an extension or a trade are likely at this point in time, again, we'll see how the rest of the season plays out and that could change things. I think a restructure is more most likely outcome. And I think if that happens, then Matt Ryan will be back in 2022. But what happens is that probably puts them on a path to trade Matt Ryan in 2023. Now, if you did a max restructure of Matt Ryan's contract, it would essentially lower his cap hit by roughly $11 million so that his cap hit would be only about 18% of next year's projected salary cap. And so I wouldn't be shocked if the Falcons decided to restructure him in with the idea of adding voidable years at the end of his contract, similar to what Terry Fontenot witnessed Mickey Loomis doing with Drew Brees in these last couple of years in New Orleans. And I won't get into the nitty gritty of how exactly that works, but basically the Falcons would be paying Matt Ryan the same amount of money, but they would be taking a large chunk of his 2022 base salary, as well as the $7.5 million roster bonus that he is due next March, which overall amounts to about $22 million, and spreading that over like 5 years instead of the final 2 years of his contract by adding three voidable years. And essentially that would wind up lowering his cap hit, not by $11 million, but by roughly $18 million. So he would instead only be counting around $30 million against the 2022 salary cap. And that $18 million savings, that additional savings, would allow you to wind up investing that in free agency to help improve the roster and hopefully allow Matt Ryan to go out with some dignity as a playoff team leading the Falcons to the playoffs in 2022, so that then you wind up increasing his trade value come 2023 when you wind up trading him. Because in a scenario where you're entering the offseason of 2023, where Matt Ryan is coming off five consecutive losing seasons, I think it's highly doubtful that some team is going to wind up trading a first round pick for a then, what, 38-year-old quarterback. So, you know, the problem with doing the restructure is that you are now increasing your dead money burden in future years. So in this scenario where I've outlined where the Falcons use avoidable years structure with a sort of max restructure in conjunction, if you were to trade Matt Ryan in the, say, March of 2023, similar to what we saw with Matt Stafford this past offseason, right, you would be taking on roughly $34 million in dead money in 2023, right? That's roughly the same amount of dead money that the Eagles are taking on this year when they traded Carson Wentz. And they were able to do that in a year where the cap is only $182 million, which is about 19% of the salary cap is devoted just to paying Carson Wentz to play for the Colts. But the projections right now are putting the 2023 cap around $225 million. And we may be lowballing that because some people think that's when the new TV money, the new TV deals that the NFL signed, is going to kick in and potentially increase things. But let's say it's $225 million as a 2023 salary cap, which would mean, you know, $34 million would represent about 15% of Matt Ryan, of the salary cap being devoted to dead money carrying Matt Ryan on the roster for him to play somewhere else. Now, that's not ideal, but it's certainly much more palatable and roughly the same as what his current cap percentage is in this deflated cap space. So it's essentially a lateral move in, as far as the cap goes, from this year to 2023. And that becomes much more possible if you wind up drafting a quarterback at the top of next year's draft in 2022. If you already have your sort of heir apparent and Matt Ryan basically spends the following season, 2022, as sort of that bridge guy, similar to what you're seeing with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance and Andy Dalton and what he was supposed to be with Justin Fields, as well as what Cam Newton was supposed to be with Mac Jones in New England. And so the question then becomes, do the Falcons use a number one pick or number two pick on that sort of heir apparent, that sort of successor for Matt Ryan next year? And again, all of that depends on unknowns at this point, where the Falcons are picking, the caliber of the quarterback prospects, et cetera. Again, go check out the Locked On NFL Draft to get more insights into that, as well as the Draft Dudes podcast hosted by Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino on the Locked On Podcast Network. But, you know, for now, I'm going to assume that the Falcons are likely to use their number one pick rather than waiting until round two, because to me that seems to be a little bit of a bigger gamble. But in theory, you could wait until round two because you don't love the quarterbacks at the top of next year's draft, because you don't want to necessarily commit to a Malik Willis or a Sam Howell or whoever that is, because you don't love that guy. You're not in a position to get the guy that you want, similar to what people think the Falcons were with Trey Lance and Justin Fields this year. And then you use the draft picks that you acquire in trading Matt Ryan the following year as ammunition to trade up to the top of round one in the 2023 draft to presumably get your quarterback of the future. But again, that scenario requires a lot of unknowns, a lot of moving parts. And, you know, you don't know how good the quarterback crop is going to be in 2023 compared to 2022. You don't know what Matt Ryan's trade value is going to be like. So that plan does seem to fit more in line with what we're talking about, where the team is basically making it up as they go, something that I've complained about a number of times on the podcast. So I feel like it's likelier that you're going to see this team wind up trusting in their evaluation skills and taking that quarterback at the top of the 2022 draft. And of course, we're going to wind up having a conversation again about whether that guy, whoever he shall be named, is a better quarterback prospect than Justin Fields, who the Falcons could have pulled the trigger on this past year. And, you know, right now, most of the people that I trust that talk about the quarterback class, at least in what little conversations I've been listening to in regard to this, I haven't fully dived deep into it, but I'll probably wind up starting watching more quarterbacks as the rest of the fall unfolds on Saturdays. But talking about this upcoming 2022 draft class, they're not talking about it with the same reverence that they were talking about last year's draft class. You know, the other thing that factors into that ongoing debate and conversation around Fields versus Pitts versus whoever is the sort of financial benefits or consequences of that decision. And, you know, had they taken Fields this year, presumably in order to move on from Matt Ryan in 2022, they would have to take in a much bigger financial burden. But waiting a year, they are potentially lessening their financial burden, spreading that over multiple years rather than taking it all at once. But you're potentially, you know, that's the pro of waiting a year to take their quarterback of the future. But the con is that you're potentially adding more risk if you wind up settling, air quote, settling for a lesser quarterback prospect. And so at the end of the day, the conversation, always the debate winds up being settling by the same thing that we've been talking about all day, which is, you know, wins are what we're going to measure these things by. You know, you justify your decisions, you justify your actions by winning games. And so whether we see Malik Willis or Spencer Rattler or Sam Howell being that better prospect of Justin Fields, you know, is only going to matter, is only going to be determined by that guy winning more games than Justin Fields winds up winning. And so that Fields versus Pitt conversation, you know, in all likelihood is not going to go away anytime soon. It's going to be something that we're going to continue to be talking about, because you're not going to get a situation like Patrick Mahomes where that guy's going to have relatively instant success in the league and kill that debate. So that's going to be an ongoing conversation potentially for the next 3 to 5 years that you're watching these quarterbacks, whether we're talking about Fields or whether we're talking about the Falcons quarterback pick, develop and grow. And we're going to still be wondering, hey, who was the better pick? Who was the better guy? And, you know, 5 years from now, we might be saying, oh, well, clearly Mac Jones was the best guy. We should have taken him. And that's also a possibility as well. So That's where I'm going to leave it here today, guys. And that's just my thoughts on the subject. And I'm, you know, there's probably other people that have been discussing these things. I don't claim ownership over this idea. But you know, I don't really listen to what other people say about Falcons. So if other people have been talking about this, then I haven't been hearing it. So, that's just me doing my own dot connecting and sort of guessing what, if there is a plan, that might be the plan. And so whether we're talking about the Falcons reaping what they sow or lying in the bed that they made, regardless of what sort of idiom or metaphor that you want to use, at some point, whether it's this year, next year, or whenever, the Falcons are going to have to start winning games in order to justify whatever these decisions this year, next year, whenever, wind up being. And, you know, I'll readily admit that until we see that plan start to fall into place, it's going to be harder for me to be patient about what they're doing. So hopefully, you know, the Falcons go out there and win this weekend, start winning some of these upcoming games, and this whole conversation gets tabled for several months, if not several years. And so maybe if the Falcons start winning, it becomes a lot more plausible that the Falcons could wind up deciding to keep Matt Ryan for a little bit longer beyond this season, beyond next season, and many more years. So that will be determined by the team winning. But we'll hope for our sakes that the team will start having success. We'll hope for Matt Ryan's sake that the team starts having success. And we'll sort of see how it all plays out, guys. And that's where we're going to leave it. And, you know, we're talking about potential plans. We're talking about potential gambles and whatnot for the future and as well as the past. And of course, there's no better place to be talking about potential gambles and actual gambles than the Locked On Bets podcast, where you can hear from host your boy Q, as well as handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get Lee's daily picks, blowout specials, and his lock of the day by following the Locked On Bets podcast presented by betonline.ag on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. So guys, if you have any feedback on anything I've discussed on today's episode, anything I've discussed on past episodes, or anything you want me to discuss on future episodes, of course, you can hit me up on Twitter at Locked On Falcons, on Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or you can send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. Appreciate it, guys. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Sunday evening for a rapid reaction on whatever happens in this Giants game. Until then.